Thanks so much for listening in here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. As I said, we're going to switch gears a little bit. We're talking about health issues today on the show. Jerry Apps talking about his book and his life with polio. I think one of the scariest diseases that you can have is, aside from polio, is cancer, and especially brain cancer. It's got to be a very frightening for any patient who is being treated with for it, and certainly it's got to be scary and frightening for the spouse, the children, and all the other loved ones who, of course, are connected to the person. But, you know, even when we're dealing with a serious medical condition, it's important that everyday life feel as normal as possible. That's one of the things we want to talk about today with our two guests. Dr. John Kuo is an assistant professor of neurological surgery and human oncology at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. He's also the director of the Comprehensive Brain Tumor Program at the UW Hospitals and Clinics. And he's also a co-director of the UW Comprehensive Cancer Center Multidisciplinary Brain Tumor Clinic. Is indeed a multidisciplinary, and we've got him on here. I think we have him on by phone. Dr. Kuo, thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to come back on your program.
Yeah, it's great to have you back. Lori Hayes is with us as well. Lori is a clinical nurse specialist who works at the Brain Tumor Clinic, one of the organizers of an upcoming conference for people living with brain cancer and their families. And Lori, thank you so much for being with us, and welcome to the program as well. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Let's talk first about how common this brain tumors are. How common are they, and are they always malignant? I guess a couple of questions to ask Dr. Kuo.
Sure. It may seem like brain tumors have been in the news lately, but it's a rather rare condition, and it's really a mixture of many different types of tumors, both benign or non-cancerous, as well as the brain cancer we talk about. So most of the times when we hear about somebody saying that they've been diagnosed with a tumor, it's usually because it's cancer that's spread from elsewhere in the body, like lung cancer, melanoma, breast cancer, that may have spread to the brain. And that is really the most common sort of brain tumor we hear about.
Okay.
Then, of course, the second most commonly found would be the malignant brain cancers that grow from the brain tissues themselves. And that has been in the news lately with several prominent people who suffer from that. And then, actually, more and more commonly now, we do find that for people who get scans due to headaches, due to car accidents or falls, we see something on the scan that's unusual, and that's how we pick up benign conditions such as meningiomas or pituitary tumors. These are benign growths in and around the brain that may have some consequences, since the skull has a finite volume, and like I tell everybody, there isn't much room in there except for your brain.
Yeah.
But overall, it's rather rare condition, even though we take all of these together compared to more common causes of headaches or more common causes of problems associated with the brain.
I want to invite our listeners to join in. Maybe you or someone close to you has been diagnosed with a brain tumor. What's your experience been? Maybe you've lived through a diagnosis, a case. What do you want others to know about? What helped you get through daily life? Those are some of the things we can talk about. Or if you just simply have questions about brain cancer, I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post as well on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Lori Hayes, maybe you could talk a little bit about risk factors that are out there for developing brain tumors. Do we have some?
Well, that's a really difficult one. As far as the malignant gliomas go, there's some question about whether there's environmental sources, i.e. chemical exposure, but the documentation for developing a brain tumor as far as being a, what they call a primary brain tumor, something that really starts within the brain and grows within the brain versus a cancer that spreads from somewhere else, i.e. a lung cancer that goes to the brain or breast cancer, those have much different risk factors than developing a what they call a primary brain tumor. But there's not a lot of good data out there that talks about risk factors. John, unless you have anything else you'd add with that.
Yeah. Dr. Kuo, anything?
Sure. I think you've hit it on the nail there. It's a rare condition, and while there are some rare genetic diseases that may increase your risk or some rare environmental exposures, a lot of people want to hear about cell phone association with tumors, whether benign or malignant. And even the word on that is still out there. We're still, all of us, participating in the biggest clinical trial ever, if you think about it.
Yeah.
But the physics and the underlying science suggest that there shouldn't be, but of course biology can always surprise us, and we don't know yet if there's any association, for example, specifically about cell phone usage.
Well, for the people, I mean, a lot of people almost live their day with their phone stuck in their ear. So you wonder if, I guess you're right. We are living through a pretty large clinical experiment right now with these cell phones. Man, I read an article. I read a piece about a guy who was in a bad accident and has had a head injury, and he said it was the luckiest thing that ever happened to him, because when he went in, they actually discovered a cancer in his brain, which they wouldn't have probably found if it hadn't been for that accident. And I'm wondering, how are these brain tumors usually detected?
You've also brought up not an unusual case. I've had certain patients come in for one reason, and then they have something else found on a scan as well. But as you can imagine, the brain is rather plastic and adaptable. So for slowly growing benign tumors or even slowly growing low-grade cancers, if it's in the right area of the brain, like in the frontal lobes, one may not detect much of a difference in the person's personality. There may be headaches that are progressive. But a lot of times we find people who come in for other reasons, and then they have something found. On the other hand, if you do experience a blackout episode or a seizure, if you do experience headaches, difficulties with vision, nausea, things that are progressive, and you've been treated for the flu and it's not getting better, then try to talk to the doctor's office again and try to see whether they can look a little deeper, because sometimes a very small, rapidly growing lesion in just the appropriate or right parts of the brain can cause symptoms earlier. The brain is really controlling many aspects of your life and your function and your interaction, your personality, memory. So anytime anything's a little off, one would have to look deeper.
Joe and Madison wondered what percentage of people who come in scared of having a brain tumor actually have one.
Very low percentage. Very low percentage, but it's something that scares people. So I think that it's something that peace of mind with an appropriate imaging study or an appropriate neurological exam and somebody astutely thinking about it can rule out. Because wouldn't it be great if for most people with headaches we don't find any brain tumors, but for the ones that do need a diagnosis early, we detect it.
Absolutely. Sharon in Milwaukee has a comment. Hi, Sharon. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call today.
Sure.
My husband had a brain tumor removed not yet a year ago, just in June of last year at UW. And he had headaches that presented originally periodically, and they went to more consistent daily occurrences. And obviously, we took some time and ended up taking the tumor out. How common is it that because the thought really for him was that the tumor was not causing the headaches, but subsequently, the tumor is removed and the headaches have gone away. I asked because we have another friend who was diagnosed with a brain tumor who also was told that the headaches are not being caused by the tumor. How common is that? And obviously I'm not asking for you to speak to the specifics, but is that a common occurrence that you have onset of headaches that may or may not be related to the tumor?
It happens pretty frequently. A lot of times, and I just came from my clinic, and I'll be going back to it after the show, people have symptoms that aren't always explainable with the imaging findings or the studies. But it's certainly reassuring to hear that your husband got better and the headaches gone away after the tumor was removed. So
yeah.
In that case, we've sort of proven that it may have had some contributing factor to the headaches.
And so for those people who, because we kind of just kept pushing on that angle, saying this was never a problem before, something's causing this, how do people advocate for themselves to say, no, this is not normal for me?
Exactly what you just said. And I think that we hear this quite a bit because most of the time some astute family doctor or internist or neurologist has picked up on something, and it's really the patient and the family who knows best how they are and how they should be, and that this is a change. And, of course, the flip side is there are many, many different causes of headaches. Brain tumor is only one rare, uncommon cause of it. And if you should have a symptom that's bothersome, that's progressive, then certainly that's important to get somebody to listen to you and work up to make you feel better and to diagnose a cause, whether or not it's a tumor.
Yeah.
I'd like to just finish by saying we had a fantastic experience at the UW. Thank you.
Oh, thank you very much for calling. And that's, I'm sure, makes you feel, Lori and John both feel good to hear that.
Absolutely. And it's because we have nurses and coordinators like Lori who are so involved with the patients and families and who have taken the initiative to organize these conferences that we have, and I hope that she'll have a chance to talk a little bit.
Oh, absolutely. We will be talking about a great conference that's coming up relating to this, and the focus is on quality of life and survivorship issues, and conference title is A Life Between Treatment and Scans, and you're going to have a chance to learn a whole lot more about that and about brain cancer as we visit with John Kuo and Lori Hayes about brain cancer. Stay with us. Sometimes it can be tempting to avoid talking about or even thinking about very serious health concerns. Brain cancer certainly isn't pleasant to think about, but it's important to know what risk factors we may have and that there are some wonderful resources available for both people living with brain cancer and for those who love those people. Larry Mueller here. Dr. John Kuo is an assistant professor of neurological surgery and human oncology at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. He also directs the Comprehensive Brain Tumor Program at UW Hospitals and Clinics and is co-director of the UW Comprehensive Cancer Center Multidisciplinary Brain Tumor Clinic. A busy guy. Dr. Kuo, thanks for taking time to speak with us today. Appreciate it very much.
It's a pleasure to be on with you.
Lori Hayes with us as well is a clinical nurse specialist who works at the Brain Tumor Clinic and is one of the organizers of an upcoming conference for people living with brain cancer and their families. And Lori, thank you as well for coming on the program today. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
We already have some callers online who have questions and comments. If you have a question or maybe an experience to share, I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. There's a conference that's coming up that we want to tell you about, and we'll get to that in just a minute or two. But Dave in Evansville has been waiting a long time to get on the air, so I want to give him a chance. Dave, thank you for waiting. Hello.
Yeah, thanks. I wanted to talk, you were talking about symptoms and touch base on the different types of brain tumors there are. My brother has a fatal type. I don't remember what the name of it is, but anyway, he started dropping tools. We were on a race team building race cars for midgets out in Sun Prairie, and he started dropping tools in it. And we don't drop tools building cars because you handle them so much. And he says, I don't know. It's funnier now and then. He says, and my foot has got something wrong, too. So I made sure he got in and saw someone and went in for a biopsy. And they gave him 8 months and he made 10. So, and that's my story about symptoms. As little as you think they are, they could be something big.
Well, Dave, thanks for calling and sharing that. And Dr. Kuo, maybe you could comment.
Well, you highlight something that's very important, and I will try to emphasize that. If you or your family members notice something is not quite right and a little off, whether it's numbness, incoordination, whether it's just headaches or even just personality changes, chances are it's not a brain tumor, but certainly one would want to know and see your family doctor or your medical doctor and at least run it by them and have them take a look, because your brother, as you say, benefited from the early detection and the fact that you brought him in and probably had better quality of life in that fashion.
Ellen in Brookfield, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi. I have a sister who was diagnosed last May with glioblastoma multiforme, and she actually was pre-symptomatic. She had patulous eustachian tube, and in trying to figure out what was wrong with that, you know, they did the MRI and found this cancer. I'm wondering if there's anything in the works, some sort of trial for somebody who has already had surgery, radiation, is on chemo. I know there's a trial in Milwaukee for some, for pre-treatment people for a vaccine, but is there anything that we have not been able to find in our research that's out there to try?
I think that I can't speak to your sister's specific case, of course, but in general, most of the academic centers, and certainly ours being one of the anchors of the National Clinical Trials Groups, have many clinical trials open and available. We have some that are homegrown that have been started here and spread internationally, and these will apply for people who've had biopsies or who've had surgeries and then the standard radiation and chemotherapy. And that's the exciting thing. There's quite a bit being done in laboratories. My lab studies cancer stem cells, as well as in the pipelines, both at the cancer centers, like the Carbone Cancer Center here at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, or even in collaboration with pharmaceutical companies to try many different agents that have already made a difference, that have already increased the survival and improved the quality of life for brain cancer. And I would urge you to get on the internet or call us, and we can discuss the opportunities that there might be for clinical trials.
Yeah, absolutely. I believe on my Facebook page have a link to UW. Yes, we do, to the your clinic and your area. So if you can go to the Larry Mueller Show, we'll get you right up, or just go to uwhealth.org. You're going to find the brain tumors neurosurgery unit, and you can just go from there. And certainly urge you to do that today. And thanks very much for calling. One of that, here we've just heard from a sister, and we've heard from a brother just prior to that. And I know there's an annual Focus on Brain Tumors educational day that might apply to brothers and sisters and other family members. Lori Hayes, maybe you can talk a little about that.
Sure. We have a conference coming up on Saturday, May 4th, and this year our focus is really on living with the disease and the diagnosis. And we recognize that this this tumor affects not just the patient, but their caregivers, their partners, their siblings, and the family. And so during our conferences, we try to include topics that might be relevant to spouses or siblings. Sometimes we talk about nutrition. Sometimes it's actually grieving the person that you used to be and learning to live with the new person, because sometimes the diet, the tumor can, or the treatments can create personality changes or behavioral changes that can be either disruptive or new to learn to live with. Sometimes the diagnosis creates issues that you can't drive or can't drive for a while, so it changes your relationship. Who's going to help you? Who's going to help you get to places? And so we recognize that this is a stressor for everyone, and so we try and include those kinds of topics as well.
So this is and this is free and open to the public?
That is correct. And the person with the tumor can come, the family support people can come, or they can come together. We don't require that the person with the tumor has to attend with you. If you're their sister or brother or wife or parent, you're more than welcome to come.
And again, the location and date?
It will be on Saturday, May 4th at the UW Hospital. There will be signs that will direct you over to the rooms and the actual location.
Yeah, but and this has been something that you've done now for, this is not your first year.
No, this is our fourth year of doing a conference. Our first year focused on the caregivers and support people, so we really focused in on them for our first conference. And then our second conference was kind of what's new and what's coming down the line for treating benign tumors and malignant tumors. And then our conference about 18 months ago was really focused on the benign tumor group, so pituitary tumors, meningiomas, vestibular schwannomas. And this year we wanted to focus on living with the disease, survivorship, and quality of life issues.
Well, it's obviously a wonderful opportunity for those who have been affected by this brain cancer, whether it be the person himself or herself or their family members, or just for people who might be interested in learning more about it. Obviously, it's a great opportunity. Daniel and Rice from Rice Lake, by the way, sent us an email wondering about, well, he says his father had two cousins with brain cancer. Are there genetic risks, or is it environmental? Dr. Kuo, any?
Well, there are rare genetic syndromes that may predispose one and one family to certain types of brain tumors.
Ah.
And this would have to be individualized. And then, of course, we can't rule out the potential environmental risk. There's environmental risk and exposure that may predispose or increase your risk for many different types of cancers, not just brain cancer as well. So, unfortunately, it's a roundabout way of, and general way of answering the question, but that's a better discussion to have with your doctor.
Carol in Oak Creek, we'll turn to you next. Carol, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, first-time caller. I just wanted to emphasize how important it is to get a second opinion. My sister had a brain tumor, and let's say hospital number one was eager to open her skull and remove the tumor. No other options were presented to us. So I did research and found that Frederick had a relatively new technology at the time called gamma knife surgery, a non-invasive procedure. So I took her to Frederick, and she was a perfect candidate and had this non-invasive technique done, and no problems. We're very lucky for the outcome, but I just want to caution listeners to get a second opinion and that they are told all of their options available to treat their cancer.
Good points. Dr. Kuo?
That's an absolutely good point, and that is why, for example, Larry, you've already introduced us as working as a big team.
Yeah.
We have a multidisciplinary approach, neurosurgeons, neuro-oncologists, radiation oncologists, endocrinologists, neuroradiologists, and not to mention we have great nurses like Lori and technicians and social workers and nurse practitioners all working together to try to give all of the different options. And I encourage my patients to get second, third, fourth opinions. I encourage them to, you know, many of them are dealing with a shock to the system when they get a potential diagnosis of a brain tumor, and to wrap their head around the different options and the different technologies. We're fortunate here at Madison to have many of the major pieces, but certainly I'm very happy to help, and all of my colleagues are as well, to arrange multiple opinions for our patients to get all the options.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Carol, again, good points. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. By the way, you can join in, too, if you have a question or comment. We have an open line. We can get you on relatively quickly at 1-800-642-1234. Nate in northern Wisconsin, thank you for calling. Hello.
Oh, yes, I'm a police officer in northern Wisconsin. Approximately 5 years ago, I had a report of an intoxicated driver. Myself and another deputy tracked the individual down. He'd been hit mailboxes on the wrong side of the road. We made contact with him and quickly determined that he wasn't intoxicated, but noticed that he was deteriorating quickly his mental status, requested an ambulance. We thought possibly it was a medical reaction. He'd been to the eye doctor just prior to our contact. We made contact with the eye doctor as the ambulance was responding. The eye doctor told us that he had seen a brain tumor when he was doing the eye exam, and that he hadn't told the subject yet. The subject's only symptom prior to that was the night before he saw the eye doctor, he'd started getting double vision. So he was transported to the hospital. By the time he arrived at the hospital, they were doing CPR on him. They did stabilize him, and he did live for approximately 2 months after that. But
wow.
I was shocked at how quick that happened.
Wow. Well, thank you, Nate. Thanks a lot for calling. Dr. Kuo, comment?
That's an amazing story. But as we all know, the eyes are the windows to the soul, and they're actually a window for us to see what the pressure is inside the brain, and a very important part of a detailed neurological exam, because I've had patients sent to us who had very astute optometrists or ophthalmologists pick up on higher pressure and want to then follow up with imaging and discovery of a tumor. So that's an extreme case that was described, and I'm really glad they pulled him over and helped him before he hurt anybody else, too. So
yeah.
As you can tell, the brain is a very sensitive organ and really determines a lot of what we do, our feeling, our personality, our sensation, our movement, our coordination, our vision. Any of these things could be affected by extra growths, such as a tumor. So
yeah.
I don't want to scare anybody, but if you have any concerns or you have any concerns about your family member, it's important to get a doctor to listen to you and to look into it a little bit more.
Yeah. And Nate, thank you again for calling. I appreciate it. What an interesting story. Thanks, Nate. Appreciate it. And would it be unusual for you know, that to be for an optometrist or whoever to see that and then not tell the person right away, as was the case here?
Well, I don't know whether they had anything else ordered or...
Maybe there were other things.
It may
yeah.
potentially be that it is a pretty shocking diagnosis to make, but we have many people sent to us because they have very good family doctors, optometrists, even dentists, for example, noticing that somebody's facial features and their overbite is different, could pick up on very subtle things that are related to, let's say, a pituitary tumor causing excess growth hormone that takes years to change your facial features and cause problems. So we're very blessed when there are astute physicians and healthcare providers out there who make the initial pickup. But it really starts with the patient and the family members.
Mm-hmm. We had a Facebook comment from Louisa, whose 59-year-old father passed away 5 years ago from brain cancer. We realized later that there had been little signs that something wasn't right, little personality changes, hoarseness, word mix-ups, or little mistakes when driving. But we just attributed them to aging. And so she says, thank you so much to you two for getting the word out so people can be aware of change in themselves or loved ones and check into it and look into it.
Absolutely. Now, most of the times, it is going to be something else. It is going to be maybe
yeah.
aging. It is going to be maybe even mini transient ischemic attacks or mini strokes, or it is going to be maybe medication-related or just forgetfulness. But if there's a pattern or if there's a concern that things are changing for the worse, then wouldn't it be nice to just get a detailed look and get a diagnosis?
Oh, absolutely. Christine in Madison, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm 4 years out from a breast cancer diagnosis. My sentinel nodes were clean on both sides, but one of the things that they've been told is that it still might come back, even though my odds are good, and I'm wondering, and then once that, all we can do is wait for symptoms, and there's nothing we can do proactively to monitor it, to see whether it's developing in my liver or my brain or wherever. And so I'm wondering, is that your thinking? And then also, is there something that I can and should be doing aside from normal preventative stuff to kind of control that possibility?
I'm taking this question for me?
Yeah, I'm sorry, Dr. Kuo.
Sure. Well, first of all, congratulations. Sounds like you got excellent care, and you probably caught it early because of routine mammogram or exams, or you yourself are astute enough to have that happen. So congratulations. Mm-hmm. That's the first and the best thing to be doing.
Thank you.
The second thing is you're far enough out that it's optimistic. But you're right. Nobody can say never, because cancer cells can hide out in the body, and even if it doesn't recur in the original site, it could recur elsewhere. So there are always risks and benefits to imaging, to testing. As you know, there's a lot of data about unnecessary biopsies or testing that's done, because that leads to more biopsies and testing, each with risk. So I would say to you, live the best life you can. Enjoy and try to be as healthy as you can, and to continue regular follow-ups, and to be attuned to any changes that might be worrisome, whether it's on self-examination or other things. But there is a detailed follow-up that I'm sure you and your oncologist are working on, and I would continue that. But not to let it take over your life. You sound like you're very active, and you're rather young, and you should enjoy life. And that's the main point that we're trying to get across as well, that brain cancers and brain tumors are rather rare. It's important to pick it up, but you need to enjoy your life as well.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That was a big lesson for me through this whole last 4 years. So thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you very much for calling. And I want to go back, Lori Hayes, to the annual Focus on Brain Tumors Education Day. And could you go through that again for those who maybe just tuning in? Because we got kind of a nice event coming up in early May.
Certainly. It'll be on Saturday, May 4th. It'll be hosted here at the UW Hospital. It is a free day-long conference for people with tumors, as well as their loved ones, support people, caregivers, spouses, family members. This year, our focus is on living with the tumor, so living your best life between treatments and scans. We will have speakers talking about transitioning from active treatment to the observation phase, coping with sleep disturbances, living with an aphasia, and how do I live with that? Talking a little bit about caregivers and what do they need, because they're the other half of the story when you deal with someone who has a brain tumor, as well as looking at optimizing nutrition and navigating just with the uncertainty of the cancer diagnosis and what comes next, and how do I live, how do I maintain hope when there's so much uncertainty?
So it's a wonderful day, wonderful opportunity. And Dr. Kuo, you'll be speaking, I'm sure?
Yes, I've been fortunate to be involved with this since the inception, and I think it's a terrific focus this year on the 99% outside of the hospital, the life that one needs to lead and to enjoy family time, regardless of what diagnosis you end up having or not having. It's also a great opportunity to connect with others. We'll have sufficient time and workshops and interactive times for patients, caregivers, anybody interested to learn more from each other as well as from our speakers.
Wonderful. And here we are out of time. I want to thank you both very much for taking time to be with us today. I really appreciate it. And I hope you have a very successful event on May 4th. Thank you both.
Thank you, Larry. It's been a pleasure.
It's a great pleasure for me. Dr. John Kuo from the University of Wisconsin Comprehensive Cancer Center, And Lori Hazel is a clinical nurse specialist at the Brain Tumor Clinic, one of the organizers of the upcoming conference on May 4th. More on it on my Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show. Thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store.